Hi there, podcast listeners. This is the last time for a while that you'll hear me on the program. I'm taking early retirement to free up some time for other ministry opportunities. And I want to crack the door for you today and let you hear about some of the types of ministries that I love. We will talk to Christy DeJoris, Upstate Representative for Celebrate Recovery. She has an amazing story, an amazing message of joy and peace. Huh, sounds like a Christmas song. Tidings of great joy, peace on earth, goodwill toward men, right? Well, I like to think of my conversation with Christy as Christmas in July, or Christy in July. Christymas, that's what we'll do. Christymas in July, that's what we'll call it. We will also hear from Senator Josh Kimbrell about his ideas for comprehensive family law reform, and we'll do all that starting right now.
And here is your host, Austin Barker.
Happy Friday! And yes, it is. Even though Tony's not here, it can still be a back-patting Friday, can't it? Gary, reach around and pat yourself on the back. You've done a great. You don't want to hyperextend anything.
I can do that.
Okay, all right, yeah. Just be careful if you're driving, if you're on Interstate 85, keep your hands on the wheel, all right? Gas on the pedal, eyes on the road, but consider yourself patted on the back for making it to Friday.
We're not responsible for any rotator cuff injuries.
That's right. Not available in all areas. See dealer for details. Void or prohibited. Let's see. We're in a recession now. Did you know that? And do you feel differently now knowing that? Well, you know, I guess it depends on who you ask if we're in a recession or not. Because if you ask the Biden and his accomplices in the media, then you, the Biden. What I mean is if you ask President Biden and his accomplices in the media, they will tell you that the definition of a recession is highly technical and fluid and negotiable. But that's only true in the Biden era, because if Donald Trump were president today, you know what these people would be saying. We're in a deep recession, and they'd be telling you how long it's been, how many months or how many years or how many financial quarters it's been since we've been this bad off. So I'm just saying, you got to take this stuff in context and you got to deal with it with a grain of salt. What I don't like either, though, is Republicans coming out and saying that, you know, how bad things are and, you know, how people are suffering. It's like, well, you didn't say that yesterday morning. And now today that you have new numbers, now you can use those numbers as political tools or political leverage. I don't like using data as political tools, but maybe that's just the world we live in and I should get used to it. Hold on, I'm gonna drink my coffee. I have my Myrtle Beach State Park cup. This is a beefy cup. I don't think it actually has, like, the volume of the cup carries anymore, but the size of the thing, compare that to your cup. Christy DeJoris is in the studio with me. We're going to talk to her in a little bit. I think my cup is cooler and bigger and just beefier than your cup.
It is.
Not than your Celebrate Recovery cup. That's because that's pretty cool. Is that a Yeti? It looks kind of Yeti-ish.
No, but I did get it at Myrtle Beach.
Did you really?
Yes, I really did.
How cool. I don't know if Tony's at Myrtle Beach, but anyway, yeah, we went down to Myrtle Beach State Park, and I couldn't help myself. I like big, beefy coffee cups. I like big ones. I don't even care so much about the volume of the thing, but look at how, if you look down at this thing, you see the diameter or thickness of
it
the
is.
Do you see that, how thick that is?
Yes.
And when you hold it, it just feels like you're a real man. All right, so what else do I want to tell you about? Yeah, we're in a recession. There's some serious flooding in Kentucky. I got cousins in Kentucky. I hope they're okay. I better text them sometime today. It's in eastern Kentucky that they've gotten so much rain. 10 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. Can you imagine?
Wow.
I mean, we ain't got rain in 3 months here, but they got 10 inches in 24 hours there. If we could just divide it and, like, average out the thing a little bit, that'd be good. The Mega Millions jackpot is now just over a billion. Did you hear that? B? That's a plosive linguist talk there. $1 billion.
They're trying to draw me in.
Are you going to get a ticket, Gary? Go get you a ticket. It's my last day on the radio. I should go out and get a lottery ticket just to celebrate. I could win.
If it's God, it just takes one ticket.
That's exactly right. I've never bought one in my life, but I should go get one. 301, your chances are 1 in 303 million.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 3, that's hard even to put that many, to know how many zeros that is. That's 8 decimal places. So you got 8 decimal places standing between you and winning the $1 billion lottery. Do you know how much you'd get if you actually won the $1 billion in lottery winnings? How much you'd walk away with?
Well, they
if
do
you took the lump sum cash payment.
Oh, it'll be less than a billion, but still.
Oh, a lot less than a billion.
I would at my age, I would have to take the lump sum.
Well, the other option is to take 29 annually increasing annual payments.
Right.
So each year they pay you more. So. I would be tempted because obviously if you take the distributed payout, then you get a lot more in the long run.
Right.
They give you a much greater percentage of it. They just give it to you over time.
That's right.
And you could die tomorrow.
Right.
So.
And you can't pass it on to anybody.
Is that right? You can't.
Yes. Nope.
So if you die, that's where the payout stops.
That's it. The target's on your back. So eat healthy.
Oh, there's a conspiracy waiting to be unearthed here because I wonder if people ever do, and I don't know how many people do, take the lump sum versus the distributed payout. But if people take the distributed payout, wouldn't there be an incentive for the lottery to, like, bump them off?
Hadn't thought of that.
She knows. Hmm. She knows how this works.
You're into what websites have you been visiting?
I think that did that one come off of Gateway Pundit, probably. So, all right. Well, Gateway Pundit is like the gold standard for unreliable news reporting. It is the gold standard. No one does it better than Gateway Pundit, or worse.
If you buy one ticket, we'll know if Austin wins because he won't be here on Monday.
Experts agree. I heard what you said. Okay, I didn't miss it. Experts agree that if you win a sizable jackpot like this, you should immediately go dark. You should go into some sort of sequestration. Like you should buy an island and then go there, turn off your cell phone, and only via email a whole team of get a team of advisors around you and surround yourself with advisors, and then don't trust the advisors. The Red Cross is asking, please, won't you please donate blood? We're experiencing a shortage of blood and platelet donors right now in the summer. This is a pretty routine, so I don't know if I trust that. I mean, this is like extra, read all about it. We need your blood, which sounds really kind of macabre, but I typically hear this in the summer. So I think there's just a kind of a regular summer ebb, and they're saying it's unusual, but they especially need type O negative blood. So I assume that's pretty rare. O negative is pretty rare blood type. So if you have any type of blood, go give blood. There's different donation opportunities in the month of August on the 25th of July, which that one's already passed. That was this last week. But on August 2nd from 1 to 6 at Ark of the Upstate on Grove Road. On the 14th, you could go to Grove Road. On the 16th, it's Embassy Suites Greenville Golf Resort and Conference Center on Verde. And then the 22nd. Anyway, if you go to their website, which is redcrossblood.org, you can find out where, you know, what their donation schedule is. But here's the kicker, the thing I should have started with. And they didn't either, though, which surprises me. They didn't even headline the thing. But here's the kicker. Fuel up on us, they say. As blood and platelet donations drop, gas prices have reached all-time highs in the U.S. As a thank you, everyone who comes in to donate blood August 1st through 31st will be automatically entered for a chance to win gas for a year. Mm. Well, it's not as easy. You can't just, like, fill up all your friends' cars, you know, and, like, you know, get just unlimited gas. But it's a $6,000 value, they say, and there will be three winners in the month of August. So everyone who comes to give blood or platelets will receive a $10 gift card, e-gift card, to a merchant of choice. So they need your blood. Go give your blood. That's that. I don't want to talk about that. I'll just tell you that the first Gary gave this to me yesterday. So if I don't read it, then you'll
that's
fire
all right.
me or you'll
no,
you know
no.
where I sleep at night.
That's okay.
Or something. On June 7th, so that was a month and a half ago, Compass Care's pro-life medical office in Buffalo, New York, was the victim of an arson attack. I don't like the adjectives. That's why I think I don't like this, is because they say a brutal arson attack. Well, I don't know what distinguishes an arson attack from a brutal arson attack. It seems like people would have died in a brutal arson attack. But so there's a lot of adjectives and sensationalism, and I don't like sensationalized news reporting. But anyway, it was perpetrated by Jane's Revenge, the domestic terrorist group that doesn't get labeled so, except for by people like me and Gary. Compass Care, this clinic, reopened to serve patients the very next day after the attack, but in an undisclosed location. And now, despite increased threats by those terrorists and verbal attacks by anti-abortion politicians in the state of New York, Compass Care has become, in their to their knowledge, the first firebombed pro-life medical office to rebuild and reopen in just 52 days. Did you hear that? Did you hear like echoes of biblical theme here in just 52 days? What are you thinking of?
I'm thinking we're building on the back of the statue.
No,
that's been going on a
that's
while.
That's Nehemiah stuff.
Yeah,
Nehemiah
that's...
finished building the wall in just 52 days. And I think that phrase actually comes right out of some versions of the Bible. If you read it in some versions, it says in just 52 days. So that's kind of cool,
I think.
I think that's cool that they rebuilt. I don't know if they planned that or if that just happened or if that was kind of a God thing. So anyway, they go on, but... They have, this is interesting, they did extend an olive branch to New York Governor Kathy Hochul and Attorney General Letitia James, and they said, why don't you come down and meet these people and, you know, tour our facilities and see what we actually do here instead of just going off of caricatures and stereotypes of pro-life advocates, and they have not heard back from them, unsurprisingly. Let's see. Is there anything else? I'm moving fast today, am I not? Because I've got so much to get to today.
Yes.
And it's my last day on the radio regularly. I'll be back. Even within just a few weeks, I'll be back. So don't get all sentimental and try and call me and tell me how nice it's been and how much you're going to miss me and all that stuff. I'm not into that rank sentimentalism. It makes me tear up and I don't like crying in public. It's embarrassing. Blah, blah, blah. Stocks are up. The Dow Jones is up, and the forecast is clear, and healthcare concerns are the focus this year. It's always time for a Gaither song. All right, so today we have Christy DeJoris is with us in studios. You've heard her just a couple times. I'm going to be interviewing her from 7:15 to 8 o'clock with an interruption from Josh Kimbrell at 8:30. I want to talk to Josh Kimbrell about his comprehensive family law reform ideas, which I'm really excited about and want to hear from him. I am going to be talking to Kyle Marsh in the last two segments of the program today for the last half hour. He is with Next Steps Today, who is one of four candidates this year for the Hope Awards, which we heard about with Kerry Sanders and talking to him with Jumpstart Ministry. We will also be talking one of the most exciting interviews I've done, and high octane interviews and heavy philosophical stuff, but stuff that you can use, I think, will be with Father Dwight Longenecker at 8:15 this morning, a Catholic priest from here in Greenville who has some incredible thoughts on contraception and anthropology and what it means to be human and how we're getting it wrong in our culture today and how Catholics have been getting it right, even righter than us Protestants. So that's going to be really interesting. You don't want to miss anything today. This is a high-octane show today. As you can tell, my tongue is very fluid today. All right, before I get to my interview with Christy DeJoris, Chris wants to go and get all sentimental with me. Go ahead, Chris.
Morning there, Austin. I hope you're doing well.
Thank you. I am.
Good. Hey, look, it's been fun. I enjoyed you being on the show. I hate you have to leave, and I just want to make sure we can leave as friends.
Yeah,
I always enjoy talking with you.
We never got to get that lunch together, or let's say we haven't yet got a chance to have that lunch together, have we?
I'm sure Reggie would love it to be a part of that as well. So, yeah, we need to do that one day because I've always enjoyed talking with you. I know things have gotten heated at times, but, you know, I don't think we ever got personal.
No, and yeah, we didn't.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. I do, too.
We're not going to see eye to eye on everything.
Right.
There are going to be disagreements, but, you know, we can do it without there being any hatred, you know? And we can do it and still be civil to one another.
Absolutely.
And I hope everything goes well with y'all, and I guess we'll hear from you soon.
Yeah, I'll be back on August the 18th, I think, is my first scheduled day back when Tony's off. And so, obviously, anytime I'm back on the air, I'd, you know, love to hear from you and from all of our regular callers and appreciate that. You know, if we could layer across the demeanor that we have back and forth. And as you say, you know, sometimes it does get heated, and especially whenever the topics themselves are hot to the touch. You know, abortion obviously is the first that comes to mind. That's where we have our strongest disagreements. But
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, even at that, when we get to the end of those heated discussions, we say, all right, let's let time turn the temperature down on this debate, and we'll come back and re-engage with civility.
Yeah.
So
we have to do that. You're right.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Good luck to yourself.
Hey, appreciate that. And we'll catch up again, and I appreciate you calling. All right, Christy. Christy, welcome to the show formally now. We've kind of heard your voice over there.
Yeah.
Get right up on that microphone so people can hear you. And tell us about why you're here today. You're the state rep for one of several state reps for Celebrate Recovery here in South Carolina.
I am. There are 5 state reps in South Carolina. We're really lucky to have that many.
Is that right?
And in the upstate, we have 2. Which is amazing because we have 26 Celebrate Recoveries in the upstate.
So it sounds like you're saying that that's an unusually large amount for this geographic region.
It is.
Okay.
It is. We're not a huge city, so to have 26 in our little corner of the upstate, that's pretty dense population.
Wow.
For Celebrate Recoveries.
Wow. Why do you think that there's so many here in the upstate?
You know, I think because people need it and recognize their need, and because we have churches that are willing to support a ministry like this, not just for their people, but for people surrounding them. Because most of the people that come to Celebrate Recovery are not members of the church.
Gotcha.
That is hosting it.
Gotcha. So I guess we need to, for some of our audience, I don't meet many people who don't know what Celebrate Recovery is, but why don't you just introduce them to the ministry and tell them kind of how it started and what it does for people?
Okay, how about I introduce myself first?
That'd be perfect. Thank you.
Okay, I'm a grateful follower of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I'm celebrating my recovery from years of domestic abuse, relationship addiction, an addiction to marijuana, and I continue to work on my many character defects, and my name is Christy.
Hi, Christy.
Hi. And the reason we introduce ourselves like that is because life comes at us with a lot of hurts, habits, and hang-ups. So all of us, until we look just like Jesus, we have something to work on.
Yeah.
And if we were constantly introducing ourselves by what we have to work on, it would get kind of depressing. But if we can introduce ourselves by the identity of who we are in Christ, you know, that's our identity. Who he says we are and how we relate to him and how he relates to us. So that's why we introduce ourselves like that. So Celebrate Recovery is a Christ-centered 12-step. It's for any hurt, habit, or hang-up, which kind of sets us apart from other 12-step ministries. Most 12 steps, you're working on one thing. You know, it may be drugs, it may be alcohol, it may be eating disorders, it may be mental health, it may be sexual addiction. But for Celebrate Recovery, we feel anything can be worked through the steps. So if I can just tell you real quick what a hurt, a habit, a hang-up is.
Absolutely.
I won't read them all, but a hurt is a life experience that has damaged our heart, some offense against us that have crippled our ability to deal with the world in a healthy way. It could be abortion, abandonment, abuse, betrayal, dysfunctional family, neglect, rape, affairs, unforgiveness. A habit is an unhealthy pattern that we use to cope with that chronic condition. It's repeat behaviors. It can be alcoholism, bitterness, drug abuse, gambling, gossip, lying, self-harm, sexual integrity, pornography, workaholism. And then a hang-up is a roadblock that keeps us from progressing in God's plan for our life. Those things are like anger, anxiety, worry, bullying, control, depression, fear, greed, and a lack of self-control. So any of those can be worked through the 12-step, and I think you would agree, these things keep us from being who we should be in Christ's kingdom.
And these are things that we try to hide
yes.
in our lives. You know, this is not what we want people to know about us.
That's
and
right.
So we just put a mask on and we say, you know, I don't want you to know about this part of me.
Right.
Because if you did, you'd probably like me less.
Exactly.
And so how does Celebrate Recovery interact with that hiding impulse that we have?
Well, from the minute you walk into a Celebrate Recovery, the people that have been there are going to be sharing that they struggle with these things, how they struggle with them, and that makes it easier for someone to share back.
I was going to say, what did that do for you the first time you walked into a Celebrate Recovery room? And I don't know if you know the first time you walked in. I probably remember, I know the first time I walked into a Celebrate Recovery room, and I know what was going on inside my head and what was going on inside my heart. I'd like to hear
right.
your story.
When I walked in, I wasn't a Christian.
Uh-huh.
I was going because it had been recommended to me by a counselor.
Yes.
And so I walked in, and I wasn't going to talk to any of those people.
Yes.
I wasn't going to be one of those people.
Right.
I was just going to check the box that, yes, I came. I did what you asked me to do.
Yes.
What's next in fixing the mess of my life?
Yep.
So as I listened to people share, I was kind of shocked that people in a church
would do that, would be like this.
Yes. And there were a bunch of them.
Yes.
And as each person shared, I felt something in me start to break.
Huh.
I felt something in me starting, you know, walls that I had built for years and years began to crumble a little bit.
Yes.
And as they opened up, I wanted to be able to say something back. Now, it took me weeks and weeks to say something back. But when I did, no one looked at me funny.
Right.
No one said, what?
Oh, you know, wow, that's uniquely bad.
Yeah, they didn't. And so I felt more comfortable and more comfortable and more comfortable. And like I said, I didn't have a relationship with God. I kind of believe there was a guy, but I knew he was out to get me for choices I'd made. And so I was just waiting for him to get me in a negative way.
Yeah.
And eventually he got me in a very soft and gentle way.
Oh, how special is that?
It was.
But that's who God is, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. But I didn't meet him at church.
Uh-huh.
I met him at Celebrate Recovery,
yeah,
where people were real and humble and broken.
So tell me this, this is kind of a little bit off script, but do you meet God in a closer, a more intimate way in a Celebrate Recovery room than you do in a church service?
For me, personally, yes.
Okay, I do too.
Personally.
Yeah, when I walk into a 12-step room, and I'm saying 12-step more generally because I've participated in several 12-step programs, at least a couple other than Celebrate Recovery, in addition to Celebrate Recovery. And when I walk in to celebrate, like for instance, a few weeks ago, I took a homeless friend of mine who's struggling with a meth addiction. I took him to a Celebrate Recovery at I think it's Flat Rock Baptist Church in Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm saying the name of the church right. But I walked in the room and I just kind of started crying because the presence and power of the Holy Spirit in that room is in concentrated doses that I don't find. I meet the Lord in church.
Right.
But I don't find him in the same way in a church service, in a worship service, as I do in a Celebrate Recovery room.
Right.
I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's a me thing. I don't know if that's a God thing. I don't know if that's a CR thing. But it's a thing.
It is a thing.
Okay.
And when people come in and they're new and they're nervous.
Yes.
And then they see people that admit their hurts, their habits, and their hang-ups, something in them is open.
Yeah.
Because they begin to have hope that people can like them for who they really are,
exactly,
that people see them and want to know them and not judge them.
I was talking to Andrea Pia yesterday on this radio show, and she was talking about her history with having had an abortion and the freedom and blessing and peace and forgiveness that she's found through admitting that she had an abortion and doing that publicly. And I don't mean you have to do it on the radio. I'm just saying you walk in and with another person, and our family creed, the Barker family creed, says you cannot get away with sin. Be sure your sin will find you out.
Mm-hmm.
But we confess our sin quickly to God and to another person.
Right.
Like that other person matters. Like God is there and he's real, but we don't feel him and interact with him, be able to converse and have eye contact with him the way we can. And when we open up to another person, it does. It breaks something in our heart that really needs to be broken.
Well, and he tells us to do that. James 5:16, confess your sins to one another and pray for each other so you may be healed. It doesn't say so you may be forgiven.
Hmm.
It's so you may be healed. He designed us for a relationship and getting to be real with another person in relationship without judgment, but with prayer and compassion. That is how we find healing.
So this list of hurts and habits and hangups tells me that almost anybody belongs in a CR room.
Yes.
Is that right? I mean,
yes.
why do more people not take advantage of this this gospel opportunity that's in front of them?
They don't want to be judged. They don't want to be rejected. If you think about it, if I show you a mask of myself and it looks all good and nice and warm and you're
right,
my friend,
right,
and I don't know, you don't know the real me, but you like who I'm showing you, what happens if I drop that mask and let you show and I show you the real me? Are you still going to like me? Are you still going to want to be with me and hang out with me and not judge me? You know, it's a very scary place.
Why does that matter so much? Why do we need to be liked? Because you and I both keep using this phrase, we want people to like us.
We do.
You know, what is that? What's going on there?
That's called codependency.
Is that a hurt or a habit or a hang up?
It is. It is. It can be all the way across all of them because you know, obviously it's a hurt because we don't want to be rejected. It's a habit because we keep wearing masks.
Right.
And it could be a different mask. You know, I could wear one for you and one for you and, you know, one for the neighbor down the street.
We're really good at that, aren't we?
We
That's
are.
Something we humans are really good at is hiding.
I think we
started in the garden.
It did.
You know, as soon as we fell, God comes down, Adam, where are you? Yeah. Over here, hiding behind the bush and the fig leaf.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And it's true for all of us. Huh. I believe everybody has a little codependency.
Huh.
Some people will disagree with that. But whenever we people please or whenever we do something for someone so that they'll like us, that's codependency.
See, I hear the word codependency and I don't have a category called codependency and I don't know what to do with that. And I certainly don't suffer from it.
Okay.
But I said exactly the same thing about resentment when I walked into a 12-step room. It's like, I don't have any problem with God. I've had a wonderful life and yeah. All's good. I don't even know why I'm here.
Right.
You know, and I was there because I was being told to be there.
Right.
You know, in a CR room. And yeah. and the headmaster of my school found pornography on my computers and said, if you're going to continue to be employed at this institution, you're going to go to a 12-step
right.
group because you need help.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't need help. This is just a struggle thing that I've got. You know,
yes.
I've got this.
Right.
And God bless the man, an Anglican priest, for saying go to Celebrate Recovery.
Exactly.
And it started me on a 12-step journey that continues.
Yeah.
And you know, 12-step is not the gospel.
No.
But Celebrate Recovery has sanctified the 12 steps and
yes.
brought it into the church is the way that we talk about it. Is this the 12
right.
steps the way the church does the 12 steps? Can yeah. you distinguish before we take a break? Oh, I got two callers and I got to
okay.
get to these. Okay, you probably
okay.
won't be able to hear them real well, but Tom, let's get Tom on the air before we go to our break. Good morning.
Hey, Austin, good morning.
Yes, sir.
I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and my name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
hey. Austin, it is so great to hear people being authentic.
Hmm.
When people really share what's going on in their lives and don't put all the responsibilities off on the world, do the hardest thing that I think that anybody can do in their whole life is to turn and look inside and see what's going on with them. And it is so difficult, and CR helps with that. It has been a blessing in my life. And just before I go, Austin, we love you. We're going to miss you. I look forward to hearing, seeing what's going on in your Facebook page. Love you guys and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate your call and glad that you're finding, you know, the healing through, as you've said, authenticity, turning into your sin and facing it head on, looking inside yourself and starting that process of self-examination that can happen outside of a 12-step room, but happens so well within a 12-step room. Welcoming to the show this morning, State Senator Josh Kimbrell. Good morning, Josh, and thanks for calling.
Well, good to be with you for your swan song appearance. By the way, do you know where that term swan song, why we call it that?
I know, but I forgot. Tell me.
I thought there's several versions of it, I'm sure, floating around. But essentially, during the Soviet Union, whenever there was going to be a change of leadership, they would always have Swan Lake. They would replay Swan Lake. So it was an opera that was played at the at the playhouses there. So it was interesting. It was always a signal of regime change. So this is not, we're not comparing you to the Soviet Union. It's sad to see you go.
Yes, you are. So, admit it, you are. Everyone calls me a liberal, and it's okay. I can take it.
I honestly haven't heard enough of your, you know, I hear y'all from time to time, but I'm always running around here. So
sure you are. Yeah.
I haven't heard you say anything crazy left wing yet, so hopefully you haven't gone off the left wing side of the ledger.
Not at all. To hear Milo say it, I've had some sort of conservative resurgence. I've become way more conservative than I was 15 months ago. So Tony's been good for me. You've been good for me, apparently.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we've rubbed off a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. That really is right. Josh, I follows you on Facebook, and I've been seeing you make some posts about your ideas for, and it seems like there are various ideas, a lot of different policy proposals that you've been floating under this kind of category of comprehensive family law reform. Can you tell us about some of your really good ideas?
Well, yeah, you know, the person who knows more about this or as much about this as me is your producer over there, Mr. Miller, because he and I went through a lot of this together. I lived this. You know, people don't – it's been a long time since I did a daily talk radio program over there, but about 7 years ago, I won custody of my then 3-year-old son, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
After a grueling multi-year family court war. And I've written a book about it. I think it's still available on Amazon called Fatherhood on Trial. And what I learned by going through that, and I do think God lets us go through experiences in life so you can use that experience to do something to help other folks. And being that I'm in the legislature now, in the Senate now, that's a, I feel like that was probably, not probably, that was providential. I experienced that. What we have in right in South Carolina right now, and in most states, is an adversarial system where two parents going into a family court case with children already don't like each other. You know, that's sad, but it's reality. Right. By the time somebody's going to divorce court, they're already not really friends, and the kids are caught in the crossfire.
Sure.
And the laws that we have on the books are intentionally, they're designed to be adversarial, where mom and dad are going to fight each other. They're outdated from the late 70s, the last time we updated family law code. And we make it to where pretty much going into a divorce proceeding, one parent is going to be cut out of their child's life. And about 80% of the time, that's the dad, unfortunately. I'm not picking on anybody. There's moms and dads both who lose opportunities with their kids, but 80% of the time, it's the dad who becomes a visitor to his children. And so you have kids that are growing up in single-parent childhood because the government mandates that, right? I mean, right now, under the current guidelines, typically, one parent's going to get 80% of the time with the child, one parent's going to visit every other weekend and one night a week. And that child, under no fault of his or her own, is relegated to government-mandated single-parent childhood because of a failed system. And that's what I'm trying to fix. Is, you know, if mom and dad can't stay together, you know, I certainly encourage families to stay together. I've experienced the pain of when they don't. I think moms and dads raising children together was God's design. I think it's the best design for society. If you can't maintain that marriage, though, we shouldn't let the kids lose a parent as a result. So I'm trying to reform family law to where moms and dads are going to be forced to cooperate, even if they don't want to stay together. They're going to be forced to cooperate for the sake of their kids, and we're going to have to make sure those kids have both parents as much as is possible.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are exceptions. If somebody's an alcoholic or abusive or drug addict, well, there's exceptions to that. But I want a rebuttable presumption of joint custody for mom and dad as long as both are responsible parents.
Boy, I'm trying to write these things down. Rebuttable presumption of joint custody. How do you do that in a policy?
Well, right now the policy is the family court judge has a very limited guidelines on what they can do, right? Under state law right now, you don't go in with a presumption of joint custody. You go in with a presumption that one parent's going to be the primary custodian and one parent's going to be a visitor. And judges have very little discretion to make a whole lot of changes to that. There are exceptions, but not common. What I want is under state statutes, we can change family law statute under South Carolina code to order a family court judge to go in and say, okay, unless there's this circumstance, or this circumstance, you're going to make sure that the parents get 50-50, they get the split time with the child. And that's what you call a rebuttable presumption. So what that means in lawyer speak, rebuttable presumption means unless there's some auxiliary circumstance, we're going to assume that even though you and mom and dad, y'all are getting divorced, both of the parents are going to still raise this child. And the reason it's called rebuttable is if a lawyer for a mom or dad is going to ask for that to be changed, they've got to prove why. In other words, dad's abusive or mom's an alcoholic or mom's, or vice versa, or whatever, right? You're going to have to make a case as to why that parent shouldn't be in the child's life. And absent a really convincing case with some evidence, the presumption is going to be that child gets to see both of his parents, his or her parents.
That's the default.
That's the default, yeah.
Okay, so Josh, I feel like every senator that goes down to Columbia has some of these really good ideas, and so few of them ever get to see the light of day. Who are you working with on this, and what chance of success do you have in terms of actually getting this into a policy and shepherding it through the legislative process?
Well, look, I understand a lot of politicians talk about a lot of things, and they don't do much about it, unfortunately. That's typically because they don't mean it, right? I mean, if you really are a persistent person, you can make change, and especially in the South Carolina Senate, because we have we're a small enough state, and the Senate's got enough influence. If you really want to be effective, you can push. There are a whole range of people who are interested in this discussion. This is a bipartisan issue, actually. This isn't something that's just Republican or just Democrat.
Uh-huh.
It's something that affects everybody. In fact, if you look at the court system in South Carolina, the number one of all the different courts we have, from the Supreme Court to the criminal courts, which is called courts of general session, to common pleas, all the top two courts that people will go before are magistrates and family law. So the average person listening to you right now will never go to a court of general sessions for a criminal hearing. They will never go before the state Supreme Court. They're never going to go to any of these. They're not even probably going to deal as likely even with a probate court. But they're going to see a magistrate or a family court judge. And so this affects everybody. And there's a bipartisan consensus, I believe. We're going to have to work at it. But I think chances of getting some significant family law reform are very high because everybody knows it's broken. There is nobody you're going to talk to, regardless of where they are on the political spectrum, who's going to tell you, man, our family court system is great. It's just working so well for families. Nobody says that.
With so many kids coming from broken families, you know, that becoming split families and divorce becoming more and more the norm. I think we're above 50% now. I know there are a lot of
53%, 53 to 54%.
Yep. So I know there's a lot of dads out there who are facing the exact situation that you faced, where they're facing this adversarial, you know, a system. How do you take the adversarial nature? You know, I guess that you've already kind of answered that question, but they're wanting that to happen. I know there's dads that are listening to this and saying, I wish that I could have what he's proposing.
Well, it's not just dads. It's most of the time the dad, but there are occasions that the mom gets railroaded too. Unfortunately, it does tend to be the father, but regardless of his mom or dad, no parent should be railroaded because the other side has more money or the law, you know, or there's just this bias in the law.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you take out the adversarial nature of it, I mean, look, court system, we're a common law courts in this country, right? We have a common law tradition, which we can't get into all that right now, but that's a really good thing for freedom. I think the common law tradition is a good thing as a whole. But what the common law assumes is when you go before a judge, it's the plaintiff and the defendant, right? That's the adversarial system by nature.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we've done to make it worse here is in our system in South Carolina family law is we've, again, assumed that one parent's going to walk out of there with almost full custody and one parent won't. And here's what happens. If you've never been through a divorce, I'll walk you through it. So if you decide we're not going to be together anymore and you have children and you go to your first hearing for a separation order so you can begin, because in South Carolina, barring abuse or adultery, you got to wait a year to get a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
We do that intentionally, so we try to give people time to cool off. But you're going to have to wait a year to go start the legal separation. You go before a judge. In that first hearing, it's called a temporary hearing. There are very few things more permanent than a temporary hearing because you have about 15 minutes before a judge. There's no jury in this particular situation, right, because it's just a preliminary hearing. So this judge has got to decide in 15 minutes which parent is going to see the kids for the next year for the most part, right?
Mm.
I mean, that judge is going to decide in 15 minutes mom or dad are going to have the kids 80% of the time. The other parent's going to visit for the next year until we figure out what the final arrangement's going to be. So obviously the lawyers for both the mom and the dad go into that situation with a scorched earth approach. We're going to mute the other side. We're going to trash the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many fake criminal allegations get made. I was a victim of that.
Right.
But 99%, listen to this statistic, this is 100% true, 99% of criminal allegations made by a former spouse against their former spouse, or made by a husband or wife against their former spouse or separating spouse, 99% of the criminal allegations are fake, 99%.
That's
and yet
crazy.
We do nothing to hold them accountable for doing it, right?
Wow.
So what happens is mom will go in or dad will go into the court and to tell the family judge, yeah, I should get the kids because he beat her. He beat our daughter.
Hmm.
Or the mom or the dad will say, she beat our daughter. And then these are fake allegations, okay, it's fake. But they do this to try to win an advantage in the family court case. By doing what I'm suggesting, which is we do a presumption of joint custody. And by the way, we prosecute fake allegations. I'm actually putting into the family law package, if you go make a false criminal allegation, and we can prove that you knew you were making a false allegation, we're going to prosecute you for perjury. We got to put a stop to that. So I think a prosecution for perjury in a family court case, as well as a presumption of joint custody, sort of cools everybody's head down a little bit and hopefully takes some of the adversarial nature out.
Because it removes the incentive.
Yeah, right now we give perverse incentives, right? The,
mm-hmm.
the incentive right now is, well, you're not going to get in trouble if you go make a fake criminal allegation, but you might win custody.
Hmm.
If you have to think twice about that, where you know you're going into a situation where barring some significant evidence, you're going to have joint custody anyways. And by the way, if you lie to a police officer or a prosecutor, we're going to prosecute you the chances of doing that are a lot less.
That's really something. Josh, these are great ideas, and I got to move on. I'd love to talk to you more about this, and I hope I have the opportunity to in the coming days. But I really wish you Godspeed on this effort, because I think this is what, you know, people like me, just we appreciate common sense legislation, and this is very much, that was the name of your radio show, and that's, I think, embodied in this effort. And so I really appreciate it. Really appreciate you taking the time to tell us about it.
I appreciate the blast from the past referring to the Common Sense Radio program, but I appreciate what you've done, Austin. It's been good to have you on here with Tony, and we'll miss you.
I appreciate it so much, Josh. All right, in the studio with me this morning is Christy DeJoris. She's the representative for Celebrate Recovery for the state of South Carolina, the upstate of South Carolina. And I would love to hear how you got involved from Celebrate Recovery, but what I'm really asking is tell us your story, your recovery story.
Okay, so like a lot of young girls, I read a lot of romance novels when I was young, and that led me to believe that I needed a guy to make my life dreamy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, you know, I started down that path. And, you know, as a teenager, there's not a guy out there that can really make a girl's life dreamy.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's just a bunch of hormones and starting to find out who you are and growing. And so, anywho, I got a guy, and we were together 6 years. About 2 years into our relationship, I got pregnant. He was in college, and he said, not now. So we chose to have an abortion.
Mm.
He graduated from college. He went into the Army. He graduated from officer training, and I got pregnant. And he said, not now. We need to get established first. If you don't have this baby, I'll give you a ring, and we'll get married. And so I had another abortion. Well, about a year into planning the wedding, he was with someone else, and they married, and they had kid, you know, in succession. But I was left alone, and as you can imagine, I felt a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of heartbreak.
Yes.
I'd spent 6 years with a guy I loved trying to get him to marry me, and I failed. And failing at that, which was my life ambition to have that dreamy life, broke something in me. And I fell back into a pattern of, I need a guy to make my life dreamy. So I went looking for one. And the more I looked, the worse I felt about myself, the worse the pool of guys I was fishing in became.
Mm.
Well, eventually I had a guy that did want to marry me. He was very angry. He was an addict. He was an alcoholic. But I felt a lot of self-shame and guilt. So I decided to marry him. My family couldn't understand it, but they didn't know what I'd done, because I had begun wearing that mask that kept anyone from seeing the pain that I was walking around in. So we got married, and not far into the marriage, I got extremely sick. I had started going to Furman University. I was a senior. My sickness, it's called lupus. I couldn't write after a while, so they gave me an aide, and then not much longer, they gave me, I quit being able to read because my brain was flaring. So they asked me to take a sabbatical. So here I am, very sick, married to an angry addict alcoholic. So what do I do next? I let my guy introduce me to marijuana to cope with my depression.
Okay, pause for just a second. Can you tell us when you actually reached the bottom?
I haven't reached it yet in this story. But it's, now
keep
I'm
going.
On. Yeah, now I'm using marijuana, and I can justify it because I'm sick.
Right.
I'm on chemotherapy to keep my immune system from killing me. So I'm very nauseous. I'm in a lot of pain. I'm being abused by an angry alcoholic addict. So I pretty much started giving up on life.
Mm-hmm.
My parents didn't give up on me, though. They started taking me to places to help me medically find something to keep me alive.
Right.
And alternative medicine did save my life. Mm. I found out back 30 years ago, before it was popular, that I was allergic to gluten.
Mm.
And so my eating habits changed, and that helped me get off the chemo. But here I was addicted to marijuana. I started going to AA to deal with that addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And after several years, I was able to put my addiction aside, but I was left in a marriage with an angry alcoholic addict who was very abusive. I started making a bargain with God, though. I didn't really want to believe in God because I knew I should be punished for my choices. I had two abortions.
Mm.
And what do you do with that? you can't take that back. You can't really redeem it. But, you know, you just got to live with it from that point. So I thought. But I started making bargain with God that if he'd give me a daughter, I'd give her back to him. And after 8 years of trying, he gave me a daughter.
Is that right?
And then I was afraid not to give her back to him.
Yes.
Not that I knew what that was going to look like to give my daughter to God, but I started going to church. At church, I started seeing a church counselor, and a few weeks in, he was like, you need Celebrate Recovery. And I was like, I need Celebrate Recovery? I'm already recovered. You know, I put down the marijuana. What do I need Celebrate Recovery for?
Right. You knew what the 12 steps were.
I knew the 12 steps.
Yes.
And so that didn't make sense to me. But like I said, I was checking a box. I went to Celebrate Recovery. And as I sat there and heard people talk about their hurts, habits, and hangups, I realized, oh my gosh.
How many tears were involved in that first meeting?
Lots. Yeah. I couldn't even say my name.
Right.
I had a lot of shame. And I thought,
yes.
Even though I heard what these people were talking about, nobody said anything about abortion.
Oh.
So I decided what I would work on is
with
the
everything else and keep that one inside.
The abuse, because the abuse wasn't pointing at me. It was pointing
Bless
at someone
heart.
Else. And so that was easier to point at someone else, right? My problem is him. And that's what got me in the door.
We've got 1 minute.
Okay.
I just keep telling your story because I just love this and I know our audience does too. But we've got a minute until we have to hit a hard break and then we'll come back on the other side of the news.
Okay, so there I show up week after week feeling, you know, like, okay, they kind of accept me because I have the abuse that people can talk to
me. You have something you can talk about.
Something they can talk to me about. But mm-hmm. Man, that was so on the surface.
Oh.
That was so on the surface. And, you know, no matter how much I talked about him, it never helped me. Nothing in me was changing. Nothing was getting easier.
All right, so let's pause the story right there.
Okay.
Because you've still got a deep, dark secret that you're hiding.
Yes.
And sin grows in secret. It grows
it
in the dark. It's like moss. It's like mushrooms. It grows in the dark. You've got to expose it to sunlight for it to die.
Yes.
And I'm doing capital S and O in
yes.
there. So when we come back, we'll hear the rest of Christy DeJoris' story. I know you're loving this morning, just like me. We'll be back after the bad news.